Hallo zu einer neuen Folge des Media Lab Innovation Podcast. Ich bin Christian, ich arbeite im Media Lab Bayern als Innovation Editor und ich bin heute euer Host. Wenn wir über Daten in Medienunternehmen sprechen, habe ich immer das Gefühl, dass es sehr schnell sehr, sehr technisch wird. Es geht dann oft um Analytics und Metriken und solche Sachen. Meinem heutigen Gast geht es da aber um was ganz anderes, denn sie sagt, dass für eine erfolgreiche Arbeit mit Daten vor allem die Kultur stimmen muss, dass man also eine Datenkultur braucht, um aus den kalten Zahlen wirklich wertvolle Schlüsse ziehen zu können. Mein Gast ist Sarah Hack. Sie ist Senior Data Scientist bei Springers Nachrichtenaggregator Update und genau über dieses Thema Datenkultur werden wir uns jetzt unterhalten. Sarah ist übrigens Britin und deswegen wechsle ich jetzt auf Englisch. Now for our talk, I'm switching to English. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for being on this podcast with us. I'm really looking forward to hearing all about data and insights and data-driven newsrooms from you. But let me just first start with a question that is probably very basic for you. When we talk about data and insights, what is actually the difference between those two things? I'm thinking about maybe people that want to track how successful their article is, and then they measure the number of clicks on their headline, and then a headline gets a lot of clicks, and then they say, oh, it's a successful article, but what was it actually they measured, right? So they measured a successful headline. They don't know if the people like the article, if they interacted with it. Is that something you see as well as a problem? And then how do I make this differentiation between what is a data point and what actually tells me something that I want to know?
I mean, from my experience or what I've seen, I think companies or newsrooms in specific are quite good at tracking a lot of metrics. I think editors, publishers, they're aware how many articles are getting published. They're aware of how many people are clicking on the articles, and actually talk about data as a whole and how this data feeds into a company and how we should really understand and evaluate and analyze the data. So that's something that's missing. But yeah, companies are doing really well in tracking singular points and seeing their readership, for example. And that I feel like that so far so good, but it's not enough.
That's interesting that you say that, and I think that's good to hear for a lot of media companies that are tracking this data. Then maybe let's talk about what you think the difficulty is and what you think the problem is, if it's not so much these types of measuring that I talked about, but if it's more this data in the company that you mentioned.
Like I said, I think people aren't talking enough about data. I think we're not talking about the data that we have. I think we have this very simplistic approach towards data, which is in the form of, let's say, just looking at singular KPIs. So it's very common for businesses to love having a handful of KPIs, which are helpful for certain metrics. I'm not criticizing that. But I think it doesn't make sense to just look at a single data point and saying sales went up over a week and just looking at that on its own and not understanding why sales went up and what were the reasons behind sales going up. And again, talking about that, really, really understanding and evaluating the data and talking about data as a business and not just a silo. So that's something that I've seen is missing and lacking in companies. And yeah, I would love for people to move away from just looking at a singular value or metric and yeah, talking about data, really understanding what data we have and what we can do with the data. And that's when you can really see the power and the use of data.
You just said that working with data in a newsroom or in a company in general, for that matter, is more than just measuring singular metrics and following singular KPIs. What is it then that makes a company data-driven in the first place? You just mentioned a data culture. Can you maybe elaborate a bit on that?
Let me just share something that I went through as a data scientist starting out my career. I was working at a gym, actually, which has an insane amount of data. They have over 100 branches, possibly thousands of users a day. So they have an insane amount of information that they've captured about their members. And they wanted to do a segmentation exercise to understand what do the different users look like, and based on that, some sort of marketing material was to be promoted. This would have been a very, very simple exercise to do with all that information. Without even thinking about using machine learning, you could just look at, there's this recency, frequency, and monetary model. just based on those three data points, you can easily segment your users. Instead, the company went for a consultancy who did a qualitative exercise based on a very, very, very small sample of users, maybe not even 100 people were questioned. And then based on that, segmentation was done. This was time consuming. This was a waste of money. Consultancies aren't cheap. And it just didn't make any sense to do something that was so easily data driven and to make that qualitative. I was always very confused by that. Why didn't they? They had the resources. They had people able to do something like that. Apparently, someone from the board suggested that they had to use this. For some reason, this conflict in companies that they're not ready to utilize data instead of us talking about data driven. And that I'm not certain about why that exists and why that is. And I think it comes to people, data still new. This is something, or the usage of data and big data. This is a relatively new term that's maybe emerged in the last 5 to 10 years, even though we've been sitting on data for a lot longer. And I think people are just not, either they're not up to date or they're afraid of it, or old habits are hard to change. So unfortunately, yeah, I do not have an answer. How can you truly be data driven? But if you have data and you have experts in data saying use data, I would start with that.
So is it a matter of a mindset? Could we maybe phrase it like this? You have the data, then you also need to want to use it?
Exactly. It's a mindset. It's about relying and utilizing your data. It's about not being stuck in old ways. But yeah, absolutely. I think, again, if you look at the structure for a company, we're still a long way from having a chief analytics officer, a chief data officer, chief artificial intelligence officer. And these are such central roles in defining the strategy and especially how data can be used. Right now, it's tough to get everybody on board and to buy in, but we have to change that mindset in companies and we have to listen and trust the experts.
Data is your friend. That's a very beautiful thing to say. You just now mentioned like different roles. Let's say I found a new newsroom and I'm a newsroom manager now. I want to be more data driven and I believe data is my friend. And especially after you told me now, I want to get to know this friend a little bit better. So I'm building my newsroom. I want to make my newsroom more data-driven. Which roles would you say are the most important ones? Which roles would you wish that every new newsroom had?
I think it's important to have someone at sort of a higher level, ideally at C-level. But if not, I think some sort of, you know, VP or lead, someone who is an influential person and having that data background, I think that's extremely important. And then I think it's important to have, again, it could be product specific. So you could have, again, maybe in the ads team, they need to look at data a certain way. You could have different analysts for the different functions. That's looking at data at a very low level. And then obviously you need data engineers to help create the pipelines to get all this data to make sure you can utilize as much information as possible.
Maybe just on a very basic level, like just thinking about myself as this hypothetical newsroom manager again, should I maybe just have a data expert in my office or at the desk next to me or something? Would that already help?
Absolutely. But yeah, absolutely. But I think that's it. Having someone who's in a central part of the team, not just a siloed function. I think that's really important. And so if you're a newsroom manager, you bring someone in who is helping lift the data, again, the data culture in the company and how again, to use data properly. And data being a fun thing to talk about, not just something to add to workload or reporting for the sake of it. So yeah, I like that. Have someone who's sitting right next to you.
In a lot of newsrooms, there's going to be other people sitting next to me as well. Obviously the journalists who write my news or who work in the newsroom. And I feel like sometimes journalists do have a little bit of skepsis when it comes to data, even though it might not be realistic, or maybe it is, that you would need to tell me, please. But a lot of people might be afraid, you know, oh, is data going to take our jobs away? Is data going to take our editorial spirit away? Is data going to take my journalistic intuition away because I just have to look at the data? Let's say, again, I'm this newsroom manager. I took a data person that is sitting next to me in the newsroom. What would you say to journalists that are skeptical about this person, skeptical about this role being so close to the newsroom manager?
It's bizarre that people are worried, or there's this fear around the artificial intelligence will take over a job. Even data scientists are afraid of this. They say the artificial intelligence will make data scientists redundant. I think what people don't realize is you cannot be successful with any data product you build if you don't have business expertise. And the idea of these data products are not to replace anybody, but to enhance, let's say, editors, an example. So for example, all the personalization work that we're doing, we are trying to help the editors. So human created content will always be the best performing because there's this human element to it. But the individual editor cannot sift through the amount of data or the amount of articles that are being published. Just to put things in perspective, in 48 hours, just on a random 48-hour time zone, we have around 30,000 articles that are potentially published. That's a lot of information for someone to manually go through to say, hey, I would like to show the user this. So in this case, we are trying to sift through all this information. We are trying to say, this could be potentially something we show a user. And we would then love for someone from the business, especially the editorial team, to then validate that and give their stamp of approval. They go side by side together. It can never replace. You could never replace a human written article or a book or anything. But there are some things that you can automate and speed up, and they're there to help people and enhance people do their job and take away all the boring stuff in many ways. So I find that really bizarre that people are afraid of this. It's, again, they should welcome this, and it will make their lives a lot easier.
If I understand you correctly, even so, let's say, intangible, untouchable stuff like intuition doesn't go away. It's just being put on a better basis, right?
Exactly. Again, it's being used in a different way. It's being used to validate an output as opposed to creating an output in the example that I gave.
Another thing that is a bit away from these questions about what is the role of a journalist and, oh, will data replace me, which you already said now it won't. It can help to enhance the work of human journalists. But there is one other point that I would like to just ask you about, because especially here in Germany, that is a big topic among editors. And that's, of course, privacy and then data protection for the users. I mean, that as journalists, we are trying very hard to protect our own data, protect our sources. That is the one side of it. But a lot of people are, and sometimes rightfully so, worried about how we treat the data of our users. And when we talk about, okay, how can I make a newsroom more data-driven, or how should a better data-driven newsroom look like? What do you think, which role does user privacy play in this? Can there be a data-driven newsroom that still respects its users' privacy?
Absolutely. Again, the worrying part is how you use information. Everyone keeps bringing up this documentary on Netflix recently. It's around how Facebook recommendations work and Google recommendations work. These companies have so much information on people. If it goes in the wrong hands, I'm not even over-exaggerating, civil wars can break out as a result. The information that most newsrooms or most companies are collecting are already anonymized. We're using data to provide our users the most useful content, for example, or we're using data to advertise certain campaigns to them. We're not trying to sell this information. We're not trying to harm our users. We're trying to, again, help them. We're trying to make their experience with news as tailored to them as possible. As long as data is anonymized and as long as it's being used correctly, and it's compliance, in the UK we have GDPR laws, then I think people shouldn't be worried. But again, silly things like having your laptop unlocked and your database with all your users and emails, those sort of things have to be fixed. It should never go into the wrong hand. But just small little data draining short courses can help solve that. I'm actually surprised that we don't have more data protection officers, for example, or that people that work with data need to sign something to say, you know, a little bit like a Hippocratic oath. But ultimately, at least the data I work with is anonymized. I could never, ever silo somebody out or track someone. I do not have that power or that information. And I hope no one ever has that level of detail. And if companies are finding that they have too much information about their users, then yes, it needs to be anonymized. And anything slightly sensitive needs to be securely safe somewhere and only accessible to certain people. So yes, maybe some work needs to be done by companies to make sure that their data is safe. But ultimately, I just want to make the case that the impact that we can have will never, ever compare to some large companies. And in a way that should be a relief, that the way that we're using data, it's all about enhancing. It's all about enhancing users. It's about enhancing the people in the company.
Well, I take away from it now, okay, I have this data expert sitting in my office. I might have the privacy officer sitting in my office. It's getting quite crowded, but that's okay.
It can also be one person. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be an individual. It doesn't have to be. But for example, banks, they have a chief risk officer, for example. And these are roles that have been created because they're necessary.
And I think it fits beautifully in what we talked about before with data culture, that also privacy, of course, and data security is a part of data culture that companies working with data and therefore newsrooms should have. Thank you for those answers, Sarah. But maybe now let's go a step further down and go to the more intricate workings of a specific newsroom. What you work with is personalization, recommendation, and helping users sift through great amounts of data. Maybe you can explain a little bit on that, because for me now, I really don't understand. You said now that, okay, your data is anonymized, of course, but you also manage to recommend to people. And you know, that for me, that sounds a bit, how is that even possible? Of course, but I'm of course not the expert. So maybe you can just start by explaining a little bit how recommendation with data works in a newsroom context.
Absolutely. So every item of data I've looked at, be it in e-commerce, be it at a gym, be it in a newsroom, it comes to me anonymized. It's given as a user ID, which I cannot trace to the individual user, but the person who needs to target something to the individual user can. So in this case, I just look at a user ID, and I have only information about what they're doing on the app. So what news articles, for example, they're clicking on. So I cannot trace an individual user. So that's usually how data is provided or stored for people that need to access it and use it. So I look at the history, let's say in the last 3 months, 6 months, what articles did the user interact with? So we have an app, so users can either scroll through or swipe through articles. So we have that information. We have information on what they clicked on, what they liked, what they disliked. But again, this is all anonymized. I cannot pinpoint, oh, John Smith, that postcode 111 clicked on this. It's just, I'm looking at users. I'm just looking at interaction with the app. So when I look at the last 3 months, all our users have been interacting with is COVID, for example. So it would be a very, so it's been difficult to really identify what else are users interested in. So instead of me going to granularities, maybe I can talk about what sort of data we collect that might be interesting for people listening. So we're a news aggregator on an app. So we collect information such as what articles did the user scroll through or swipe through. We have information on what articles the user clicks on. We have information on whether they liked or disliked. It's just like Instagram has that heart emoji. It's similar sometimes with news articles. Did they share the content? So all these information can help us understand what did the user engage with. And then based on that, we can provide them some form of recommendations. We're something that's still working on, and it's not the perfect solution right now, but we're really confident over time we'll really be able to understand our users and give them the best sort of information possible and be a source of information for them.
If you're talking about getting to know a user,
what data do I need to get to know my user better? Do I need to know their age? Do I need to know their income? Do I need to know which articles they clicked before? What is it that makes me know my user?
Different companies approach this differently. Microsoft has very popular personalization tool, and the information that they collect is actually the time of day. Let's say you click on something and images that are shown. So you can also use something like that similarly for news. So maybe the image makes an importance. Maybe the title makes it important. So there's lots of the information you can collect and track. But ultimately, you need some sort of signal to say they liked this article or they engaged in this article. You could also use time spent on the article. That's quite a popular measure as well. But some sort of assumption, which is acceptable in your business, to say this article was consumed by the user. So in our case, we take clicks, but we're also looking at other metrics to measure this as well.
I think clicks is a good example because everyone talks about clicks, and we know that on the internet, to access something, you probably need to click on it. So if I publish something in my newsroom, then I'm definitely going to have clicks. But now I did that, and now I want to go on. I want to know more. Where would you say I should take my priorities next?
There's a few things. So retention is quite important as well. So maybe your users come back more after that they see these recommendations. So that's something that we should always keep track of, is not only did they just click on an article, but do they come back daily, weekly, monthly? So that's something that's very important and worth tracking. Another thing that's also important is how they engage with the article. Sometimes clicking is not a good enough signal because of clickbaity articles. I believe we spoke about this very briefly before as well. So clicks aren't the best way. It could also have been an accident, could also just not mean anything. So that's something that, yeah, we're trying to get a better understanding of. But one way to solve this would be when someone actually clicks on an article, how long did they spend on the article? So let's say the average reading time is 2 minutes. Did they spend 2 minutes on this article? Sometimes you can also track more information on, did they scroll through the whole page, for example? So you can make some estimations based on that and really understand, did they engage with the article or not?
So we have clicks that is important to measure. We have engagement, and you already went into a bit what makes engagement. So maybe time spent, scrolled, etc. Is there anything else? They say now the third thing, like my data expert that is sitting next to me in the newsroom is already looking at me annoyed because I have so many requests to him. But now he installed that we can measure the clicks, and he made it so that we have like a cumulative value of time spent and scrolled that tells us a bit about engagement. And before I sent him on his holiday, what should I set him on next?
Well, sometimes there's a goal of an article. For example, is the goal of the article for someone to click on an advert? Is the goal of an article for someone to share their email? Articles are not always just providing news. Articles also serve other purposes. So maybe that's something to keep track of. Let's just say ads are the most important thing. So did a user click on an ad? So that's something as well that we could track. And then that means our goal was successful in that case. So some form of conversion could be measured as well.
Conversion, that's a good third point, I think. So we have clicks, we have engagement, we have conversion as good building blocks of my new data strategy, so to speak. But when it comes to, as you already said, what makes an article successful for me? Also, which engagement maybe is the most important for me? Is it that they spend as much time as possible? Is it as many clicks as possible? You know, that can be, of course, differently. What would your advice be for a company that maybe doesn't yet know exactly what it wants to measure for? How would they go about finding out? How can you just experiment with that? Would you just recommend to try everything and then see what works? Or how would you go about finding out what makes sense for your company? Let's say you had a company.
So in the e-commerce world, there's this very popular tool called Hotjar, and it actually shows you how the user anonymously engages with the website. So it shows you everything from what exactly they click on in the website, how far they scroll through on the website. They even show you these heat maps of where the mouse moves. And I think something like that's a really good starting point to get a really good understanding of how a user engages with something. So again, I can't give you a specific answer because I'm trying to avoid this world where it's like, okay, you just track 1, 2, 3 and you get what you need. So I think the first question is, what is someone trying to do? Why do you think this information is necessary? Why do you need to know how your articles are performing? So in my use case, I need to understand this information so I can make better recommendations. So that's why I need to know what are the top performing articles. And I base that on right now clicks and CTRs. So click-through rates, so it's based on impressions, so how often the article is shown and then also clicked on. So that's another popular metric that people can use. I think it's really important to then start to look at your data in that way to really identify the problem and then what is the solution. So why are you looking at the most clicked on articles? Why are you not looking at the least clicked on articles as well? And then make some decisions based on that. And then start to understand maybe there's certain authors which aren't very popular, for example. Maybe there's just some titles which aren't very popular. And then you have to do further investigation. And that's why, men, it's not just a metric that solves stuff. There's a conversation that goes on. But of course, a metric could be a starting point. So keep track of what was clicked on, the time frames, and any information that you can gather. So in an article's case, it would be the title. Sometimes the image information is available. Maybe the length of words could be really interesting. Maybe an approximate reading time that you would give the article. The category of an article, the subcategory, there's tags. There's so much information that you can just gather about one article. And all that information can then help understand not just which articles are popular, but which categories were the most popular, which subcategories were the most popular, which tags were the most popular. And obviously right now we'll see spikes in COVID, but hopefully that will change in 3 months' time.
So trying to pull this together, what we talked about before on data culture and what we talked about now with metrics, I have my newsroom now. I have the data person now. So now we start collecting data. And then we have maybe a few metrics that we've read about, that we've heard about, like clicks, engagement, conversions that might be important to us. And we just start collecting them. And then we look at them and kind of deductively see from these ideas that we had, we look at the data, and then we can start to talk about what we're actually seeing. And then from this, we can develop further stuff that we want to measure. And from there, we can continue to develop our strategy. Am I paraphrasing this correctly?
Absolutely. I think that's actually paraphrased better than me. It's all about having the conversations around it, not just having a baseline. Oh, this article had 100 clicks. What does that mean in relation to the business? What does that mean in relation to all other articles that were performing? And so there needs to be some reporting, but then there also needs to be a conversation around what's being reported. And then another conversation, what do we do about that? And having that sort of culture where we talk about how, in this case, how articles are performing, that's when you'll start to see the benefit. And then you can make changes based on the data.
Wonderful. Maybe let's try to pull this all together. Let's just assume again, okay, I'm this naive young newsroom manager. I started my own newsroom. And now I want to make my newsroom data-driven. Could you maybe, just from all we talked about, give me the 3 most important tips that you would have as a data expert for me to make my newsroom more data-driven?
Sure. So like we mentioned before, it's about obviously creating, hiring the right people, but having a team that is centered in the business and not siloed into another team. Really having a team or a function, which is the core of your business. Other really important things would be to utilize the data that you have. You'd be surprised how much data you already have without having to invest so much. I'm sure every company has Excel spreadsheets of data. So use utilize the data that you currently have and, yeah, start to investigate and look what do you have and, again, why do you need it? Why do you think it's important to be collecting information? And that question, obviously, hopefully also a data team can help and ask them these questions, ask them, how can I use this data? So they sort of go hand in hand. And then the third point is to trust then what these people are saying. I don't know why we are afraid of the change that's coming and the benefits that data can bring a company. I think we really need to embrace this and listen to what the experts are saying. Data is not the enemy. Data is a friend, like I said. And I think if people try to work on their data culture, try to really understand what the data can bring, they can really make a lot of changes. And it would really help a company. If I had to narrow down to three points, well, firstly, make sure your data and your data team is the core of your business as opposed to a siloed function. I think that's very important. Secondly, asking the right questions. Well, what are you trying to gain from this information? And trusting the people that you appoint to advise you and help you use your data effectively.
Okay, Sarah, thank you so much. It's been very insightful. And now as my hypothetical newsroom, I think, is very ready to be more data-driven. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting and hosting. I enjoy talking about data.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Eine spannende Sichtweise von Sarah war das jetzt. Und damit ist diese Folge des Media Lab Innovation Podcasts auch schon wieder zu Ende. Ihr findet diesen Podcast überall, wo es Podcast gibt, und da findet ihr dann alle Folgen, sowohl zum Thema Data-Driven Newsroom, als auch natürlich zu anderen Themen. Und es gibt dann natürlich auch alle neuen Folgen. Das Media Lab findet ihr auch im Internet unter www.media-lab.de. Hört doch mal in die anderen Folgen rein oder besucht uns auf der Webseite. Ich wünsche viel Spaß dabei und bleibt innovativ.